What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 5. The NASDAQ Futures down 3. This is after a big up day yesterday. Either a turnaround or a relief rally or whatever history will end up calling it. Whether it was the rally off the bottom or whatever. It was a big turnaround yesterday morning when President said he was talking to Iran, sort of like in the old TV shows where you pick up the phone and say hello, New York. But evidently, there are some talks going on between us and Iran. Meanwhile, our leader, our real leader, evidently, if you want to be a cynic, Netanyahu says if we stop the war now, that Iran has won. So clearly, there appears to be a difference in direction there, which I find very troubling. But Carl, how are you, bud?
Oh. Well, you know, you missed the punchline, though, Chief.
I'm waiting for the punchline, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, here's the punchline. About 5 minutes before Trump tweeted that he was having discussions with Iran, someone magically bought a whole bunch of oil futures.
You mean sold?
Their net position was short. Well, yeah. They were short. Right. And oh, by the way, apparently there were also a substantial number of trades, rather unusual for the time at which they occurred, in the indices as well.
Why does that not surprise me? I had one of our contributors sent me a long column written by Paul Krugman. I think Paul Krugman.
Yeah.
And he listed four reasons why it was sort of unusual. His third reason was people were front-running.
Well, so here's the... and then here's the other thing. Remember the threat. Okay. So the threat was you do what we want now or we're going to blow up your energy infrastructure. Right, that was the threat. That was, you have 48 hours to comply or yeah. Kaboom, right? Okay. So then there's this, and then Trump says, well, we're not going to blow up your energy infrastructure because we're negotiating peace, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, could be considered a deliberately false statement to get them to lower their guard, because guess what? Someone, I'm not sure if it was Israel or us, but someone hit one of Iran's oil terminals yesterday. That would be their energy infrastructure, right?
One would think.
Well, yeah.
I don't. Now, we're talking about a person who never tells the truth. If he does, it's by accident.
Well, as I pointed out, remember, we just had a labor report, not all that long ago. I mean, I know, time gets so compressed with, especially when people start cooking off tomahawks. But one of the things that Taco had told us repeatedly, along with Ice Barbie and... by the way, her replacement apparently was confirmed last night. That was one of the things I got as I was.
Did she get to keep the $100 million hat?
Maybe. one of the things we were told was that 2 million people had voluntarily taken their, $10,000 or $5,000 or whatever it was. CBP One renamed to CBP Home, as in go home. and 2 million illegally present aliens in the United States had taken them up on that offer, which that sounds good, right? I mean, and by the way, one of the promises he made was he was going to throw them all out. Okay, well, the BLS, of course, did detect Biden's flooding the zone thing, and it was in the BLS data. So as I pointed out, when January's report came out, and then we found out, oh, no, the data wasn't in there because of the shutdown, da-da-da-da. Okay, but then February's report comes out. The data is in there, and what we see in the data is that there was no mass leaving of anybody, whether by force or otherwise, because the civilian non-institutional population did not show that large decrease. And that would be large enough to be statistically significant. You'd see it. There's no way you could possibly have that many people depart and not have it show up in the data.
Yeah,
and then, well, and it gets better. CNN, you know, they're not exactly the bastion of truth, but, you know, hey, listen, when you have correlations, people that are not necessarily telling the truth any more than Fox is, but it happens to line up with uncorrelated
data sets. I don't think any, for some reason, nobody seems to tell the truth, and CNBC was absolutely orgasmic having the energy secretary on there. Is that guy a wind-up toy, or what is he?
Well,
it was one administration platitude after another. There wasn't a piece of truth anywhere in there.
Chief, it seems like everybody's a wind-up toy, right?
How did we get here?
Well, it's these days.
Where's Walter Cronkite? I mean, we need him, for God's sake.
Well, okay. You mean the guy that said that we lost the Tet Offensive, and you know.
Well, we did.
Yeah. Okay, they were out of fighting men and were throwing 14-year-old boys at us, but.
Well, it depends on how you... We used to win wars by body counts, too, but we never really won anything over there, did we?
Well, we left having literally destroyed all of their fighting men. I would not have wanted to be one of the GIs over there at that time. They didn't get a foot of territory from that, from that alleged offensive that they won. And in addition to that, if you were a GI over there, you were having to shoot children because they were shooting at you.
That was a horrible scene, but the whole thing was defined as somehow we were winning. But you can't win that. You can't win something on somebody else's property. Figure out who the bad guy.
Essentially, Chief, it's the same. You know, we don't learn from history. Okay, it's the same argument for why.
Yeah, we do. People who make money in the last war realize how you make money, and they make money in the next war.
Okay, I'll give you that one. But, you know, we didn't learn anything from World War II with Japan. Okay, the decision to drop a nuclear weapon on Japan was made because we had operational experience in the Pacific where we went to take an island back that they had captured, and the Japanese literally fought to the last man. Even though, you know, they had 100-1 Marines against them, right? And they would not surrender. They would literally fight until we killed every last one of them, and made us do it. Okay, and made us shoot.
Well, you recall what did Churchill say? We'll fight in the hedgerows. We'll fight here. We'll fight everywhere till the last man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was, you know, and that was the argument and the justification for using a nuclear weapon, was that if we actually had to invade Japan, and we were going to have to, if they wouldn't stop fighting.
So you're not a William Kennedy fan where he says we had to use it. The vents were in the saddle, and they rode the men hard.
No, the argument for it, and
I know what the argument was, because my stepfather was training in Arizona
The argument was that, you know, we would have to literally kill them all, okay, and now whether that was true or not, I don't know. All right, but that was the argument.
But we forgot the part about how the population was somewhat like Iran by that time, in the sense that.
Oh, absolutely.
80% of the people, 85% of the people were totally disgusted with the people who were running the place. So what do? We killed a bunch of civilians.
Well, okay, and then there's the...
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not saying I wouldn't have made the same decision. I'm saying that's what we did.
I'm just saying, Rosie, and Rosie the Riveter was putting together planes, you know, here, and, you know, the civilians were putting together planes over there. So, I mean, this is never as clean as it sounds, no matter which side of whatever.
Well, there was some justification for it in the sense that the emperor was not the warrior class, and he still was allegedly in charge. So if he delivered the emperor enough of a shock to the population, he had the ability to basically tell the warrior class to stand down and to surrender, which he did. So there was some thought to it, like you say.
Yeah, here's the point. Okay, we believed, okay, without evidence, that if we blew up a bunch of these mullahs, and we just did, right, that the result of that would be an immediate revolution from the peasantry, if you will.
Which is stone cold ignorant to believe that, but we did.
It was stone cold ignorant to believe this. And, oh, by the way, if we really believed it, then the proper thing for us to have done would have been to fly a bunch of cargo as soon as we established air superiority, which we claimed we did, but obviously we hadn't because we've had an F-35 shot down. But the proper thing to do would have been to fly a bunch of cargo planes over the top of there and drop a crap ton of weapon, small arms and ammunition. Because if the peasantry doesn't have any guns, that's going to be somewhat of a problem. So give them a bunch of guns. And GOG. Now, the problem with this, of course, is what if you're wrong and they decide that those weapons are a really good thing to use as a ground invasion force, you know, coming down towards Israel out of Iran, right? Which they
I don't think we would give them enough for that, but whatever. Yeah, I mean,
well, probably not, but you know, but the point being that
what you're talking about is how difficult it is to actually do this kind of planning. And do you count on your people to do the right thing?
Well, nobody, Chief. Nobody. This is my entire issue with this whole thing is that there's, you know, everyone thinks Trump is the smartest man in the room.
Oh,
right.
Jesus, don't even.
Well, but you talk to people and they're like, well, you know, he's obvious. You know, it's his 5D chess. He's obviously thought all this out. No, he hasn't thought it all out, which is obvious from what's happened.
How far can intelligent people go? And I believe, you know, the people who are, you know, sucking on his train are intelligent people. How far can they go saying, whatever he does, the Democrats would have been worse? I mean, I am so tired of hearing that. I scream.
You want to know the truth? I believe the Democrats would have.
They would
been
not
worse.
Have done this.
But not, well, no, not here, okay? I don't think there would have been a war with Iran.
Well, would you think the Democrats
would have... Well, there might have been one, but we wouldn't have been involved in it, okay? I still think BB would have blasted them anyway, all right? You know, maybe I'm wrong about that.
But he has the problem if people say it's too much, he's still surrounded by people that he's got a problem with. The only way he can do it is with our backing.
Well, maybe not. I don't. I,
whatever.
Know,
but
listen,
do you think that the Democrats would have bombed 7 countries in 13 months?
No, I don't.
Do you think that we'd be threatening Cuba and starving people in Cuba for some reason?
Well, okay. So now, all right.
We have a despot here who wants to be the world despot.
Let's talk for a minute about the Cuba thing, okay? Just for a moment, because you know that. By the way, reason being that is an act of war, a blockade.
Yeah.
All right, and that is what we have done. An embargo is not an act of war. An embargo is an economic action, but to physically prevent oil tankers, or in this case, diesel tankers, because that's what you know—that's what they use to generate a lot of electricity, to dock and offload. That is an act. That's a blockade. That's an act of war.
No, but that's. Wait a minute. Let's go to some War Powers Act and say you get to do this stuff because of some act from God knows how long ago and forget the Constitution.
This has nothing to do with whether or not he's got 60 days to do it. The fact of the matter is that the act, it's exactly the same thing as what we did with Japan prior to World War II. We blockaded them from obtaining oil.
I don't think did we.
The difference is Cuba doesn't happen to be sitting on a bunch of missiles that they can fire at us at this point.
Well, the I did not. I thought we had stopped. We said we were not going to give them any oil. I don't think if a tanker was coming there from the Middle East, I don't think we stopped it from going there.
That's not true.
How did our Navy come anywhere close to blockading something from Japan? We weren't even near them.
Well, we did that. We prevented that. And in addition to that, we're doing it now with Cuba, Venezuelan oil, and Iranian
oil. But we had... I'll tell you what. You're usually right on this stuff, but I've never read of any incident where one of our battleships stopped a tanker headed for Japan and said, don't go there.
Well, we were very heavily involved in that interdiction because we were pretty pissed off about the situation that was going on between Japan and China.
Well, duh, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we were actively involved. Japan was not
silent about their ambitions.
I'm not saying we were right or wrong in doing it. I'm saying that we committed an act of war by blockading Japanese shipping.
I'm not
sure.
I think that what we and the British did was didn't let ships out of like the British territories that had oil in the South Pacific. There's no way we showed up with 15 destroyers in outside of Tokyo and didn't let them in.
Well, and you know what? A distinction without a difference doesn't matter. Okay.
Well, I mean, a blockade is they're hanging outside of Havana saying you can't come in. That's a big difference.
Well, but how you account, whether you interdict them on the high seas or whether you interdict them outside Havana's port is not, doesn't change the mechanics of it.
I was always under the impression that they essentially embargoed the British territories from shipping anything to Japan. There was never any military piece of it.
Well, Chief, we essentially did the same. We essentially did the same thing though after Venezuela. You know, with that situation where we were literally boarding their ships.
Well, yeah, I mean, we sent the aircraft carrier over there. We didn't send the Enterprise to Japan.
Well, I'm just saying, there's, you know, I just see some of these kinds of things, and I, you know, is this essentially the same thing? Yes. Is it illegal? Is it an act of war to financially say we, the United States, are not going to ship you any blah, whatever blah.
I don't think that is.
No, that's not. However, if we organize a physical prevention of it, in other words, we start seizing ships, which we did in this case, that is.
Well, it comes down to where.
If I send a crew over there to board you, and there happens to be a frigate over there who's going to blast you if you don't stop.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm saying we've managed to lose our ability for some reason to walk down this on our own. We individual people. You're either for your guy or against your guy. We have people on the show that tell me I've never once been in the middle. Yeah, I have. Because if Obama did something I didn't like, I didn't like it. I didn't care if he was a Democrat and I voted for him. I voted for a lot of people that have done really horrible stuff, and I never voted for him again. I didn't vote for Obama the second time because I thought he was making mistakes. Now, why all of a sudden, because people voted for this guy, you got to take him, you got to go wherever he takes you. I don't get that at all.
Well,
I mean, the idea that if he doesn't like the place, and oh, by the way, they're never white. If he doesn't like the place, he gets to bomb them. Really?
Well, I don't think that. Look, the racial argument is you lose half your audience.
I don't think I.
Chief.
I'm just saying they're never anybody. We're not bombing Russia. We're not.
No, we're just giving weapons to Mr. I'm going to steal 20% of it, and buy property in Miami with it.
He doesn't have anywhere near as much property as Putin.
I'm not saying he does. I'm saying that is just an extension of the grift that was going on under the Biden administration and before that too.
Just regarding this guy. Now that
the whole
I'm
damn thing is money laundering.
Well, when you have somebody come up and say, no other president has done this. Nobody's had the balls to bomb Iran except for me. He was a president. Does he include himself in that group? How does a guy have the mentality? It'd be different if you and I got in there and we weren't presidents before and say all these other guys screwed up, I'm doing it. But he was one of the guys.
Well, yeah. I look at the situation that's going on right now, and the basic issue you have is that, you know, Bibi's been after becoming the hegemon of the Middle East his entire life.
He also wants to stay out of jail.
Well,
so he has to stay in power.
That has something to do with it too, I'm sure, right? But the other thing that goes along with this that is really pretty nasty is that you've got two basic splits of Islam, if you will. There's two major sects, I guess is the
yeah, and then there's a bunch of little guys, but yeah.
And there's a bunch of little guys in the middle, but there's two major sects, and Iran is, you know, represents one of them, and most of the rest of the Middle East is the other way. Not all of it, but most of it. But then again, I mean, you could say, well, you know, there's Lutherans and there's Baptists, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
When it comes to Christians, I don't know that distinction makes all that much of a difference. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I am not a theologian when it comes to, you know, the Muslim religion by stretch of the imagination.
What was the original? It was Muhammad's brother or sister-in-law? Where'd the second sect come from? Who was the original one?
I don't know precisely. I mean, the schisms are kind of funny things,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, they happen all over the place. But
the Protestant Revolution, duh. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and Luther and, so, I mean, it's not like that's a, you know, unusual. But I just, what I see here, you know, with this, and as I've pointed this out when it, you know, since it all started, the idea that the Dani, had this, you know, well-defined objective, da-da-da-da-da, you know, he knew how he was going to get there. Well, that's just a complete load of crap. And the idea that, if you look at the land that Iran sits on, first off, it's massive. If you covered the eastern
United States. Well, it's huge, mountainous,
States,
it shoots everything. We're not talking about Saudi Arabia. People think Iran is the desert. It's not.
And the mountainous situation makes it much like North Korea. You know, when all the stuff before North Korea, by the way, who shut us all up and stopped us from playing hell with them by detonating a nuclear weapon, okay, as a test, right?
Yeah.
But that's what they did. And all of a sudden, there's a little respect here, right? So the thing is that what I pointed out to many people over the years when all the North Korea stuff was going on is that, and Iran has terrain that's very similar, is that they had dug in artillery and missile launchers into the mountains. And so if you were to fly, say, a jet over the top of it and drop a nuclear bomb in one of these, you know, in the, one of the valleys, right, in an attempt to get these things, you'd nail one or two of them, and the other crews, just because they've got, you know, 800 feet of rock between them and the explosion.
Also, we do the same thing. We got stuff buried in the mountains.
Well, but I'm just saying, you do that and you'd get three of them. So the idea that you could even nuke them into submission was bullshit. All right, you'd never do it. You'd have to put people on the ground and go hole to hole, and the number of GIs you'd lose doing that would be enormous.
You need a million men.
Well, just like in Normandy. Right. And even if you did that, you might lose. Okay. Because you know, they pop out of holes like gophers. So, you know, and Iran is the same sort of situation in terms of terrain, and in addition to that, these are not stupid goat herders. You're talking, these are Persians, and a decent number of them are engineers. They're not stupid. And on top of that, they've had everybody and their brother shooting at them for the last, you know, 30 years. By the way, they've been prompting it by saying, you know, well, you're the great Satan, we're going to destroy you. Okay, I get that. Everybody hates everyone. This is where we are. But that means they're prepared for it.
Is there a method? And by the way, I got some inflation stuff to talk to you about.
We've got problems there.
I'll tell you the jumps that I've seen in the last weekend. But you have a situation where I honestly thought, and this, I'm could be very naive on this, I honestly thought that Trump actually, and Biden as well actually, did a pretty good job of all the places that Iran was being, you know, a bad boy in, they pretty much were getting their ass kicked everywhere. I mean, their guy in Syria was down. Hamas guys are down. The Houthis look to me like they're pretty down and out. I actually thought they were probably in. We hit them up with that bunker busting bomb that the president said put them back 2 years or 5 years or something. And then 6 months later, but I'm just saying what he said. Now, he doesn't remember what he said, but maybe I do once in a while. So he said, so I thought we were pretty much home clean with these guys. Now, was that just me being naive or what? That they actually, we had them, I won't say right where we want them, and all they were having all these revolts at home, and now they're killing people like the Chinese did, only probably worse. But it seemed to me they were reeling about as much as they've been reeling in the last decade.
Well, Chief, as I've pointed out, the trope, and I've pointed out, you know, this is not just in the context of Iran, but in the context of many others. You don't make nuclear weapons with uranium.
I know. Well, we've done it a couple of times.
We've done that on the show a couple of times.
When you see Joel, let me in, then you got to come back because Kenny's flying to New York.
Yeah, I got you.
He's on TV all the time.
He's not going into LaGuardia.
No, good God. Who hit who there?
Okay, so that one's pretty clear. The pilots in the RJ had no chance of avoiding that. They were on short final. They were cleared to land.
They were landing, okay.
They were landing, and they have the right of way, okay? They were cleared, so he's in the flare, which means his nose is high. And the fire engine pulls out in front of him and he's doing 130 miles an hour. I don't know what the hell you do about that.
Was there a fire the guy was going to?
Well, it wasn't a fire. There was a rejected takeoff on the other runway, and the captain on the other plane declared an emergency because he had smoke and odor in the back of the aircraft.
Ah.
So, you know, maybe his brakes were on fire, right? Because he had a rejected.
So at some point, they could have told this guy to go around, but they waited too long.
Well, no, they cleared the fire truck to cross the runway while this guy was on short final. They cleared the fire truck to pull out in front of the plane, essentially, is what happened.
Well, I one time, and again, One time we were landing at Reagan, actually, and we were down pretty low, and all of a sudden the guy geared everything up, and we spun up and around, and the guy was in the seat next to me, actually was a pilot, and he said, the pilot said, just to be safe. The guy goes, what do you mean just to be safe? The guy was right below us. I mean, my question is, and you might not know the answer, although you usually surprise me. How close to the airport, how low down can you get before you can say go around and you can get back up again?
So here's the problem in this situation. He was essentially on the ground.
Oh, all right, so he was way too low. Okay, fair enough.
At the point the truck pulled out in front of him, he was essentially on the ground. Okay, now the problem is, you know, can he spool up and go around? Yeah. And he probably could have at that point, but he's going to need three-quarters of the runway to do it, and he had no chance to actually get clear of the truck. I mean, you're low, you're slow, you've hit the ground, you've got the brakes on.
Well, I guess my question is it a half a mile before you touch down, a mile before you touch down, where you can just go? I mean, I don't know.
Well, you can be at the numbers. And I mean, you know, your wheels haven't hit the ground yet, but it takes a couple seconds, though, for the engines to spool back
up. That's what I'm saying. It takes a while,
instantly.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Very long, but it does. I mean, I've been on short final before coming into Hartsfield, and the guy's gone around it, and he's like, there's something in the runway. And, yeah, we went over the top of him.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you can, provided that, you know, if there's enough room. And you can get the, you know, you can get the energy back, but you are in an energy deficit at that point because you're intentionally landing.
Yeah, so this guy must have already been damn near on the ground when he saw the thing in front of him.
He was essentially on the ground, and he attempted to dodge. He did the only thing he could do, which was to stand on the brakes, and at a way beyond normal attempt of deceleration, and try to bleed off as much energy as he could before he hit him. And the other thing, too, that you have to realize, Chief, is that the guys flying those regional jets, typically they are the people with the least time in seat, least butt time in the chair, because that's where you start as a commercial airline.
Yeah, but how many normal takeoff and landing? None of those prepare you for this.
Well, but see, this is where the guy who's got a little more situational awareness, he notices something moving out of the corner of his eye, and he blows the landing, and he says, we're going around.
When you see, just stupid question.
5 seconds. Well, 5 seconds before, if he'd saw the possibility of the incursion and aborted the landing, but again, this is one of those things that only happens with a lot of experience.
It's a really stupid question. When you see the planes and the when they come in, it's not like a DC-3 where the nose is down. These guys come in, the nose is kind of up. Okay, so you look at where the windshield is.
Right. How much? Well, that's the problem. He can't see very well.
I'm saying how much of a look down capability does he have?
Not enough, but that's the thing is that once he's in the flare, he's pretty well committed. I mean, can he abort? Yeah, but that assumes he sees it.
Yeah, I'm saying could he see it?
And that's the problem. And so
Don't like a 740.
Joel's up.
But a 747 guy needs a camera to land, right?
I'm just saying. Once the truck moved, I don't think there was anything.
Done. All right, well, we'll see you in 10.
All right,
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief.
Good morning. Yeah, what interesting stuff yesterday, eh? In the market, big move before the opening.
You want to talk sports today?
Yeah. Hey, boy. Two things yesterday. I watched my Irish girls play very well against Ohio State and win. And then I saw UConn. I've never seen a spanking like that on TV. What did they win, like 80-20 against a really good who did they play? They murdered. How good is that team, the UConn girls team? They were winning like 60-10 or something. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Separation.
Yeah. So what now, you're Michigan guys. Are you going all the way?
Oh, man. Well, we're going all the way to Chicago to play in the Sweet 16.
So what, if you buy those tickets, what you get the two games Thursday or Friday, and then you get the one game Saturday or Sunday, right?
You know, Chief, I wish I could tell you. I got shut out in Buffalo. I'm a season ticket holder, both football and basketball. And I kind of strung on my wife. I said, we got to go. We got to get tickets. And she gets ticket. She applied for the tickets. Then she said, who are you going to go with? Because I'm not going. Well, it turned out that we didn't get tickets. And when I've gone to the Final Fours, I've kind of scalped tickets and bought them online. So I wish I know. I wish I knew.
But there's essentially three games in every regional, right? There's the four teams show up, and there's two games there, and then the two winners play. So there's three games in every regional, wherever it is, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of teams, right?
Yeah.
But just let me tell you about this Michigan team. Man, I mean, they're a good team. They got potential three NBA players. I think that's the way you got to look at
without
it, right?
A doubt.
And that's
without
the way
a doubt.
I look at all sports. Yaxel Lendeborg, I think, could be a lottery pick. Ade Mara, 7'4". Dusty's done amazing things with them. Merez Johnson, the transfer from Illinois, he may need a little bit more seasoning. And then Dusty May is just, he's such a good coach. I mean, yeah, I know.
Where did he come from, Joel?
He came from FAU. He was the one that took FAU to the Final Four a few years ago.
FAU is
Florida Atlantic University.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, what tree is he from? Who did he come from?
He went to Indiana. And he just kind of worked his way. I think he was a graduate assistant in Indiana. So if you want to say the Bobby Knight tree, you could go the Bobby Knight tree.
Okay.
But he just has an eye for talent. And he brings these guys in. and he just coaches them up, and he could just spot talent. Well, I'm actually worried about him. If I was an NBA coach, I mean, and I know college coaches don't always work out so well in the NBA, but man, oh, man, oh, man, that guy just has an eye for talent in the X and O's. I mean, I don't want to get too nitty-gritty here and bore you guys, but in their game to advance to the Sweet 16, St. Louis, you know, was hanging with them, and the Michigan got a lead. And then he just went to a press, you know, just a simple full-court press, and then boom, a turnover, a quick basket, you know, another, you know, forced error and a three, and then I think the lead went from 10 to 15. So that's my short take on Michigan basketball.
Well, Kevin says the last time Big Ten team won it all was 2000. Was Michigan State?
Right? I know.
I didn't think it was that long ago. Wow. Well, yeah. You know, it seems like watching these games, they all kind of run sort of the script. The teams that have the most depth, I guess now read most money. The first half, the other team is scrappy, and they have a couple of seniors that are pretty good. And there's always a tough tussle in the first half, and then the referees kind of favor the chalk. So the other guy's always getting foul trouble in the second half. The big guys roll over him. Or that's just the games I've been watching.
Yeah. I mean, you hate to see the referees. I mean, I've been going with chalk the last couple of years, just because it pays in these games. Of course, you got Iowa pulling the upset over Florida. You have six. You know, I also.
Well, I love
do
to see that. I thought they were out, and all of a sudden they came flying back. Last couple. That's why you can't let these guys hang around because anything can happen.
Exactly.
Hey, I got a question. I'm gonna stump the Joel here. What's the big huge bracket thing? Was it ESPN or somebody that everybody gets in? It's not Buffett's, but there was like 3.5 million people in this
yes.
bracket thing. Well, as of like, I think it was like Saturday morning before they started in the second round, there were only 255 left out of 3.5 million, right? What was the biggest bracket buster? And I would have lost this bet for sure. I thought it was the number 11 team. Somebody beat like a 13 or 14 beat a 2 or 3. I thought that would be the biggest bracket buster, but it wasn't. It was the Ohio State game. So everybody had Ohio State, even though it was an 8 versus a 9. I would never have guessed that.
Yeah, Ohio State was playing well at the end of the year. I mean, that was on Friday?
This was like Saturday morning after the first.
Saturday morning yeah. after the, yeah.
There was only out of 3.5 million, there were only 250 left or something. The guys did it all the way through.
You mean for the perfect bracket?
Yeah, and I'm sure none of them have it now. But
yeah, yep, wow.
But I would have guessed that there was a three. Somebody got upset real early in
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. I would have thought that would have been the bracket buster, but no. I said more people were wrong on Ohio State than on Wisconsin. I was surprised. Just
yeah,
saying, you know.
But okay, Chief.
What do you make of this? Interesting trades. We had actually a real nice day yesterday. When everything opened up, we didn't have any calls out there, so we sold some calls on people, and they all went the other way.
Yeah,
we're very, very timid though. Very timid and selling stuff because this stuff could be anywhere.
It's a nervous market, Chief. The bulls are nervous, and the bears are nervous.
Well, yesterday morning, this is how screwy it is. Your guy watches the VIX. Yesterday morning, the VIX is now 26.44. Yesterday morning, after the announcement, while we were doing the show, we went up, 600 points in the NASDAQ. The VIX dropped from 26 to 22. Now it's back to 26. So bomb was put on the market yesterday morning, the bomb's off this morning, it looks like, even though we're only down a little bit. But the nervousness is right there.
That VIX is tricky. Yeah. You know, it. I mean, because you get those pops, and you just got to use them in extremes. And I have my own personal VIX, and it's a lot higher than this VIX. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at near-term stuff, especially in some of these stocks, and because we know it because we really know it because we do buy a lot of put protection for our clients, and these puts are incredibly expensive.
All right, buddy.
You take care of yourself.
I'll be in contact with you later. Go Blue.
All right, buddy. Do we have Carl back?
You do, you do.
Hey, three things. Because I have
three things. Oh no.
Well, they're all the same. So people who listen to the show, some I run into at the local bar, right? And everybody gives me the inflation pops, and the thing that bothers me is when people, and I know why they do it, because their job is not to watch the market and like mine right. is, and to do the show, and you love doing it, and you write your stuff, so we're not normal in that regard. Most people, don't take this wrong, have a life, you know. They got kids, they got a job, or they're doing something else, they can't be watching this stuff all day, and don't want to. But the stuff you believe, I mean, we got a president comes out and says there is no inflation 2 weeks ago. I mean, you guys, whatever. But in the last week, one of my listeners said that she needed her doctor prescribed some kind of test. I don't even know what it was. I didn't even ask. But basically said it's a very minor test. It tells you something about how sticky your platelets are or something. I don't know. I have no idea. And she goes, don't even send it to the insurance. It's only like $60. Just pay for it. She goes, okay. Goes there. They go, oh, yeah, on January 1st, we raised it from 60 to 120. We're not talking about 60 to 65, you know, or 64
right.
or something.
Doubled.
It doubled. And
basically, yeah.
And so then we have, and this, I have no idea why anybody, I'm not saying who you should vote for, but how you can vote, how anybody can vote for this group who's in there. Now, granted, the other side could be worse, so I understand why you vote, whatever. I'm not going down that road. But all these people do is freaking lie to you. And the Biden people did the same thing. And I'm just over it. I mean, so the old people who are usually pretty smart, because they maybe don't have as few shekels as other people, I'm going to say, another listener said to me, you know, Chief, you were talking about the stupid letter that the government sent out saying, basically telling old people inflation for us is 2.3%, but inflation for you, it's, you know, 6 or 7 or whatever it was, or was it 10 or 8 on the Medicare Part B that you pay for basically through Social Security. Well, so this guy corners me and he goes, Chief, you didn't go far enough. He says, look at the supplemental insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And how much is, he goes, the increase in the supplemental plus the increase in the Part B is way more than my increase in Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a net loser on the year on inflation because their inflation isn't the same as my inflation.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that if you refuse to participate originally when you turn 65, the penalty, if you're out for any period of time after you're 65, it doesn't matter for how long, is insanely confiscatory.
Well, the person,
okay, my mother,
I'm gonna say
okay,
that,
but hang on,
just in terms of percentage wise, I told that story last week, same guy who corners me and all this stuff, he was one of those guys. Now this isn't the one like your mom where you didn't participate in the Part B from the start.
She did not intentionally do that. She was out for about 6 months after my father died.
Okay.
Because she didn't realize she had to redo everything.
Right. I'm not saying she did it on purpose.
But the penalty was insane.
Well, this person didn't do the drug thing, the Part D.
Right.
For like 2 years, and all of a sudden he needs a prescription. He goes to sign up. So he's paying a $10 penalty per month for the rest of his life for basically being an asshole and not trying, you know, not signing up. I mean, obviously, if you wait until you need the insurance and sign up that day, I don't have a problem with a little bit of a penalty, to be honest with you. So the guy is now like 73. So he's been paying this $10 a month for 6 years. He just gets a letter in the mail saying the $10 penalty is going up to 13. How could the penalty go up?
well, Chief, but this is what they did to my mother.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, and
They raise it once they told her what the penalty was?
Oh yeah.
Really?
It adjusted every year, and it ended up, I mean, she was on it. They were both on Advantage, all right, when Dad died, okay? But it ended up being like $140 a month forever, and she was only out for like three, four months before.
I know. What I'm saying is, the $140 forever turned out to not be forever. That's what they raised.
Well, no, it wasn't. It started out there, and then every year it kept getting bigger.
It's unbelievable. Well, the third one,
Now here's the other thing, though. All right, so two things I think people need to keep in mind. They don't really have anything to do with the war, but they have to do with the gyrations that have been produced by it. Okay, the first is that, and by the way, this finally showed up in the mainstream media. I'm impressed. I have been for the last 20 years pointing out that the thing that is going to detonate everything, including our civil society and our government, has been in the medical system, right? And that if we do not stop it by whatever means need to be employed, whether it's peaceful or not, if we don't stop it, you're not going to have a choice to be peaceful anymore, because your next door neighbor is going to try to eat you, because it's going to get that bad. All right, so that marker needs to be put on. Of course, everybody thinks I'm a lunatic, because that's what I've heard for 20 years, that I'm a lunatic. It's not going to happen.
Okay. Carl, if you say there's a cliff on your path going forward, until you reach the cliff, you're always a lunatic, right? Everybody is.
Except now the mainstream media comes out and says last year alone, this by the way came out of the CBO, is the source, okay, for the data. It's real. It's exactly the vertical move. You know, what always happens with exponential patterns, exactly the vertical move I've been talking about, is it's going to occur. Well, it now is $10 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities in Medicare Part B alone went on the sheet last fiscal in 1 year. Okay? Now, that is a third of GDP. In 1 year. All right.
But nobody, as long as...
Now I get it. But now let's... Now,
all right, this is where our rants coincide. Because as long as you print money to fix it and don't tell anybody about it, you get away with it. But it's reaching a point where you sort of can't. And I think...
Well, not sort of can't, because when prices go up by 30% in a year, you're not going to get away with anything.
All right, well, my third one is... I've been hanging around, maybe trying to get some shocks for my truck, right? And I wanted to get the Bilsteins. So last year, I'm hemming and hawing. And they're $75. Right. Now they're $89. We're not talking about $77 or
$78.50. No, no. Chief, this is when it stops.
Yep.
Okay? And the second thing that people need to understand is that the kind of thing that we've seen in the markets the last, you know, the last couple weeks, okay, including that rally yesterday, everybody's like, oh, it's all okay. No, it's not, and here's the reason. Anyone who was levered into this on the long side and did not have coverage, which is like almost everybody, right?
Yep.
All right. And then tried to chase this as it started to decline. The money that got vaporized yesterday when you were short and it blew up in your face, that's gone. Now, the guy on the other side,
but
of course...
it's always okay to make money on the upside, so...
saying, the guy on the other side made money, right?
But if somebody from the White House bought the market, that's okay, that's American. But if he knew there was bad news coming out and he sold the market, now that's bad.
And he shorted it, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
Right, exactly. But here's the thing, that the churn, the point is, the churn destroys wealth in real terms.
Sure it does.
Always does. And it's those destabilizing, they erode the capital base underneath price over time. This is the exact pattern that we have seen just before things have gone to hell several other times in the past. It is the same thing that happened in 2007, which did not start with two little hedge funds, with Bear Stearns. It started in Asia in the first quarter of 2007, and it was a year and a half later before it all blew up in
everybody's
face.
How come we had a client that got caught in that Bear Stearns hedge fund, and you and I didn't put two and two together?
Well, look... going into the first part of 2008, and all, this was, you know, as I was, when I was still writing on Blogger before Google got mad at me and I put everything on my own infrastructure, there were some of us that, that did put two and two together. I was short up to my neck in Countrywide when Mozilla was running around saying he was going to own the entire subprime market.
That guy,
that was one of the better trades I've ever
done.
You know,
they also sold, this number was so huge, I hope I'm right when I say this, they had sold mortgage insurance on like 40% of all the mortgages in the state of California. They were insured the whole state, for God's sake?
Well, and they didn't have the money, of course.
No, of course not.
But, well, right, and that was the thing. But as the base underneath, you know, everyone says buy the dip, you know, buy the dip, buy the dip. You know, it's the incessant, you know, thing in the media, right? The problem is in order to buy the dip, you have to have something to buy it with. Right?
Well, you have to be, you have to be of the mindset. And there's people on CNBC that probably don't know, the biggest number one guy who's always drag him out whenever you get a relief rally is that guy Tom Lee. If you're obsessed with the fact that the market right now is priced properly, that you're NVIDIA, none of these things are too high. They're all, even though they're, you know, almost record times revenue and earnings, some of them,
right,
that they're all level. Any and they're actually a really good buy here. Anything, any shock, anything that Trump says or does or anybody else does, or I mean whatever it is, that drops at 3%. The logic is it's a buy if you think it's worth this.
If my aunt Nell
had a mustache, she'd be my Uncle Ned. I mean, right? I mean,
well, yeah. And if he had nuts, yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing that goes with this, which and this is the important component, and this is what makes it so difficult to figure out exactly when it's all going to come apart. When you erode the capital base under that, the you know, you can roll out the Tom Lee dudes on you know boob tube and you know buy the dip. Problem is, in order for me to buy the dip, if I'm listening to that, I have to have capital left to do it with. If I just had that capital vaporized, okay.
Well, it's
I don't got, it's not there.
My
and
my brother Dan,
Chief, you and I know that this is a sentiment game that plays out every morning. Okay, some number of people wake up with a raging hard on because they're convinced they're going to make a ton of money today.
Oh yeah,
and some people wake up, you know, with visions of nuclear holocaust in their head, believing that the financial world's going to come to an end. And as long as there is some balance between those two groups of people, the market remains reasonably orderly.
Well, we have a situation. We have at PTI. We have several groups of, well, everybody's different, but we have people that fit into various groups. The groups that I handle are my clients. When I say mine, the people that I do 100% of their trading. Everything is managed by me. My brother has a group that has, those guys will say, you know, here's 800 grand, put 400 in the program, and they'll do the other 400 themselves. There's those kind of guys.
Right.
Then there's people who use our electronic systems through IB, which is, by the way, the best electronic system out there. If you're, I'll use the term real trader, if you do spreads and all those kinds of things, because they get the best execution. Maybe not quite as customer friendly as a Schwab, but
they're quite cheap too.
Yeah, but if you put your nose into it, they're better in terms of the execution itself. But anyway,
yeah.
So then we have people there that have a real lot of money and do all their own stuff, and of course we monitor it. Even though we really don't have to, it's IB's job, but we do. And and there are people who, for the last 6 months, have enough money and keep their size to a point where whenever we go down, they are short premium and they get long. And these guys are kicking serious ass, and all we do is worry because one day it's not going to come back. I've seen it, you know, and then everybody keeps telling me, Chief, it always comes back, and all we do is worry. And yet,
well, yeah,
they're racking up. They're racking up the cash like the dreams of Avarice. You know,
well, the truth is, it will come back. It just might be 10 years from now.
Well, what I'm saying, but I mean, they're right in the last 15 crises or down moves or whatever wars, whatever you want to call it. If you waited 2 days and you sold puts into it, you made out like a bandit.
Oh yeah.
But now I would never do that for somebody because I've seen it keep going. But obviously, other people have never seen it keep going. You say, well, geez, remember like this decade and that decade, which I was around for, oh, yeah, well, that's never going to happen again. Don't worry about it. It always comes back. And until the day, and some of these guys are, when the day goes down a lot, they're on vacation. Some people just are born with a horseshoe up their ass. What can I tell you? But, you know, so other people aren't. The one day they sell is the day we crash, right? I mean, or sell premium.
Well, and that's and yeah. And the thing, you know, picking up nickels in front of a steamroller works until it doesn't.
Well, right? Exactly right. And I, you know, but it's but right now I think the advantage, you know, we have pretty much, you know, everybody's protected, which means we have, you know, for my people, I pretty much have puts covering everything because these are people that can't afford to lose their essentially their retirement account or whatever.
Now, right.
The price of puts is expensive, but the beauty of it lately is we've moved so much up and down. We've been actually, you know, because we had we're not trying to speculate, but when you run down and your puts get in the money, we roll the puts down, and it's coming right back. So we're actually making right. money on the insurance, which you're not supposed to do.
You're not supposed to. Yeah, normally I mean, insurance is money gets flushed down the toilet, other than when the loss happens.
Yeah, right. And so I mean the whole idea. When you if you buy a stock for 100 and you buy the 100 puts for $3, you want the stock to be 110 at the end of the year, right? I mean, you want to lose the $3,
right? Well, this is one of the things that I've explained to some people that don't have really any kind of investing experience, but they have money in the market, right? You know, people that inherit a trust that's full of mutual funds or whatever, right? And I explain when I say, look. The reality is that yes, the market goes up, you know, 80% of the time. I mean, that's the statistic, right? The problem is
when you decided to buy. I mean,
the problem with it is you can't tell in advance when the 20% is going to happen,
right?
Okay, and if it occurs when you're 70, and oh, by the way, it doesn't come back in 3 months or 6 months. It's 5 or 10 years before it does. When it dives, you have to stop your draw because every dollar you draw at that point loses all the compounding during the recovery.
Well, it's not.
And therefore, the damage is multiplied by whatever the factor the loss was. People do not understand that, Chief.
Well, you have my brother. We used to do a lot of seminars. Dan did some talking as well, and Dan's a real bright guy. He's a president of PTI Securities. But you know, brothers never really want to give kudos to their brothers, right? It's almost like a sign of weakness. But one day, we're doing this seminar, and it was a lot of retired people there. And somebody said, "Well, how come when the market goes down, you know?" But it used to go down more. This is pre. Let's put money in the thing every year, so we walk the market up. This one actually used to go up and go down depending on the timing. And he said, "Well, because the reason why people get out when the market's down, when everybody on TV says this is a buying opportunity, is people look at what they've lost and they look at how much more they can't lose. And it actually was a very articulate way of what you just said, Carl. So if you have a retired couple who looks at it and they say, okay, we need $1 million because we're getting Social Security. Of course, now you need a lot more because a roof's going to cost you 90 grand instead of five, but that's another story. I mean, if you lose down to $1.5 million, down to $1.1 million, and you absolutely need the million to do what you want to do, you're afraid of losing the next 100. The last thing you're going to do is go on margin and bet more, even if you think it's coming back to $1.5 million. It's you get down to a nut where you can't lose anymore. That's why people get out on the bottom. That's why if you're not protected, that's why if you have a protected program, I mean you're draining on the insurance if it does go up. I mean that's a problem.
Right.
But if it goes down, and the rest of the world is down 40%, and you're down 8%, you can be a buyer.
Right.
That I mean you have the ability to be a buyer, but if you didn't. You what you just said is exactly true, and because you know Dan deals with a lot of retirement accounts, that's exactly true, Kyle. Much more so than you think it is.
Well, I you know
because there's no way on earth if your dad's down $500,000, he's going to bet more.
Well, not only that, but I
because he can't.
The bigger problem, Chief, now is that there's so many people that have, you know, that, that, for example, you know, a few years ago they had $1 million, you know, 401k, or, you know, or even, you know, maybe it was taxable, maybe, you know, maybe not, maybe it's tax deferred, whatever. And now it's two, yeah. Right? Okay. So what they've done, though, is they bought a vacation house. They refinanced because they wanted nicer, you know, nicer kitchen, nicer bathroom, you know, whatever. But they went from having where their nut was their power bill, a sinking fund for the roof, and the groceries, along with, you know, whatever Medicare supplemental, you know, they had out of their Social Security. Now they've all of a sudden got a $10,000-$15,000 a month nut that's from debt service,
which they budgeted themselves out to be $8,000, and now it's $15,000.
Well, but the thing is that, and that is entirely dependent on them being able to take those draws out of that too.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay, now if that two becomes one again,
yeah,
all right, they have to immediately stop that spending or they're going to run out of money. And the problem is you can't because you've got the debt service. It's not I'm not going to go to you know, ski in the Alps this year. It's the mortgage.
Well, it's the that's why, I mean, I can't emphasize that. By the way, we have Hal Pilon. I can't emphasize enough for people, for somebody who deals with clients all day long, everybody's an individual. The idea that you'll get yourself locked into these things where, you know, put the square peg into the round hole, and everybody puts 80% of their money with, you know, big cap Bob and 20% with mid cap Mike. To me, that's horrifying, because some people can afford to lose it, some people can't. Some people are working, some people aren't.
Well, it's very different. I mean, it's very different when you're 30,
yeah,
than when you're 70.
I mean, everybody goes, all right, chief guy, all he does is say you should, you'd be protected all the time. Hey, if Ricky wants to open up an account and put $200 a week in the account, every couple of months we're going to buy 100 shares of the Spiders or wherever we get. I'm not going to buy puts on Ricky. The guy's got 50 years to work before he retires. What?
Right.
I mean, really? I mean, come on. But and even if I think the stuff's too high now, you know, we're going to be average pricing, which is a term I never use for anybody. But for him, we're going to be average pricing for 5 years. He's going to be fine, I think. You know, but obviously, look at buying T-bonds. It's the safest thing in the world. And if Grandpa Carl was still alive and he walked in and I bought him $1 million worth of T-bonds out 10 years, and all of a sudden, you know, these inflation numbers, which you and I know are coming, show up, and the 10-year note goes to 10, and all of a sudden his T-bond I just paid $1 million for is trading for 600. I guess I could tell Grandpa Carl, don't worry, in 10 years we're clean. But still, it's a horrible, it's a horse bleep trade, isn't it?
Well, but there's a difference, which is that he's going to get that coupon. The problem is the value of
the coupon's
coupon
worth nothing. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's, yeah,
his prices are going up 10%, and he's getting 2%. There's a
he's
deal.
He's getting 2 and 3. Yeah, that's going to work out real well. Yeah. So I mean, that's the problem with going out on any kind of term, you know, any kind of curve on the term, right? Anytime you go out on you know, term with debt, that risk is enormous. I mean, other than the actuaries who have to by law,
yeah,
put stuff in there for duration match.
Even if you're a comptroller or state treasurer, you get some. They tell you have to buy government securities. They don't tell you how far out you got to go.
Well, I get that, but I don't understand how there was a market for 10-year treasuries at 2%.
I don't know.
Okay.
Do we have Professor Hill somewhere?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up? How are you?
Oh, man, I just one heck of a trip to Auburn, Alabama last week.
What did you you told us about that. Were you you weren't going for a game. You were going down there to do some research.
Present a research paper, yeah. I was given $900 for the travel, and I wasn't going to spend my own money. I was going to squeeze as much out of that $900 as possible, and the conference registration fee was like $200 to $300, and then, you know, getting to Auburn is like trying to get to Pullman, Washington. no matter how you do it, you're either going to pay one heck of an airline ticket, or you're going to have to drive in from an airport, a nearby airport.
How far is it from you? You're kind of south.
Well, I think it's an 8-hour drive.
Oh, that's a ways.
Yeah, so what I did is I used my veterans discount to buy a $120 round-trip ticket to Atlanta from Greensboro, and then I rented a car on Toro, a POV on Toro.com, and I requested a pickup at the Amtrak station. So when I pulled in, after getting on the train at midnight, I got into Atlanta at 9 in the morning, and the guy met me with his car.
Oh, so you took the train to Atlanta.
Yeah, and then the guy met me on Toro, the guy I contracted with on Toro. He met me at the train station around 9 or 10. I walk out. He's there. I do the check-in. Avis would never do this, they would never. If they brought the vehicle to you, they would charge you a bunch of money. This guy didn't charge me any money. I left him $30 bill in the $30 in his console for doing this. But
what kind
I
of pickup?
Jump in the car
kind of
and
pickup?
I drive to Auburn.
What kind of pickup?
It was a electric vehicle, and I wanted to try it out. And I got to tell you, I would never buy an electric vehicle after this experience, because you drive 80 miles and you want to make sure that you charge it up. I get about half the battery depleted, and I've just gone about 80 miles. And so I find this charging station on the Alabama-Georgia border. It took me 44 minutes to recharge that thing from half charge to full. 44 now, minutes.
Was this charging station, was it a gas station?
It was brand new. It was a brand new charging station. It said fast charging. And that got me across the border into Auburn.
Was there a bar there? Or
you have to sit in the car? There was a Kia factory. It was in the parking lot, basically the Kia factory on the border of Georgia.
What did they charge it for the charge?
It was only like $10, but it took 44 minutes. I think I spent about $30 on electricity for that car.
Was this a Rivian?
Huh?
What kind of car was it? A Rivian?
It was like a Volt or a Bolt, a Chevy Bolt.
Oh, so you didn't, that's not a pickup truck?
No, it's a car.
Okay.
A POV. A POV.
You said you were trying to get a pickup truck.
No, a POV, privately owned vehicle on Toro.com.
All right.
Yeah. But then when I left Auburn on Saturday, my day started at 7 in the morning. When I left Saturday following the conference at 5, of course, you got to charge it, right, going back. And again, it took me 44 minutes to recharge the thing. And then when I get to Atlanta, I want to top it off because I don't want to leave it, half empty. I get to Atlanta and I find another charging station south of Atlanta.
How'd you find all these
another
things?
44 minutes.
How do you find a charging station?
You have to go on Google Maps,
Okay.
I just went on Google and.
So while you're driving, you're on the other eye, you got your thing open.
There's not very many of these charging stations. You can't pull into like a Tesla charging station. You can't charge at a Tesla.
Oh, right.
I don't know why, but you can't. They're just, I guess, for Tesla vehicles. But man, I'll tell you,
you're preaching right into Carl's ear here. Carl, you still with us? He must have.
250 miles of driving, Tom. I think I spent, 120 minutes waiting for the thing to charge. It was just ridiculous. It was horrible. The only way I'd have a vehicle like that is if I had a job that was 30 miles away, and I could charge it at my business, at the business, and then come home and charge it. That's the only way I'd do it.
Well, the chargings, are they 220 or 4? What are they? What's the voltage?
I don't know what they are. I mean, there's one charging station on the border of Alabama and Georgia. It had about four different kinds of adapters to plug into cars.
I can speak to this a little bit.
It was a horrible experience.
Well, there's several things that are really nasty about this in the general sense. The first is that there's two fast charging DC standards. Okay, there's what Tesla has, and then there's everybody else. And over time, that's shifted. So now you've got more EVs being made with the Tesla connector because Tesla sold more than anybody else did, right? That would be okay.
Is the Tesla connector going to be the VCR tape? Is it going to win that war?
Yeah, but there's another problem, Hal, which is that the car has to negotiate with the charging station because the car is the one that knows what the state of the battery is and how fast it can actually take energy without damaging anything.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not like, you know, when you pull into a gas station, you've got this diameter of hose, right, that goes down the hole.
Yeah.
Right? And well, and if you've, you know, if you've ever had a diesel vehicle, and I have, there's two sizes of diesel hoses. There's one that are typically used in cars, and then there's the larger one that goes in truck tanks. And in many cases, that larger one will not fit in many car fillers because it delivers at too high a rate of speed, and it'll go all over the place. But the problem here is because the car has to negotiate with the charger knows what it is, what the vehicle is. And if you try to use one of Tesla's superchargers and you're not a Tesla, you're not going to pay the same price as the guy with the Tesla.
Mm.
All right. So now we have situations where I pay 12 cents a kilowatt hour at the house for electricity. Okay. It ain't nothing like that at one of those fast charging stations. All right. If you pull into a supercharger, you may pay a dollar a kilowatt hour.
Carl, do all these things have the ability, if you're stuck, to put a regular 110 in the thing and just wait a while, I mean, or not?
It won't be a while.
But I mean, they all have
24 hours to do that.
But every one of them, you could do that. Every one of them has that ability.
You can charge at 110 volts. However, you're limited to about 11 or 12 amps, okay, which is about a kilowatt and a quarter, or a kilowatt and a half. You got an 80 kilowatt hour battery in the vehicle. Guess how long it takes?
Sounds like hours.
You could do the math, right? You're going to sit there for a day. In fact, there's a bigger problem. If it's cold out, you can't charge lithium batteries below freezing at all. You'll destroy them, or they'll catch on fire. They'll short and catch on fire. So the system prohibits that. The monitoring prohibits that from happening because, you know, that destroys your pack. So what happens is if it's cold and you plug in, the car has to heat the pack first before it can allow it to charge. If you're on 110 volt power, it is entirely possible that the amount of energy available is less than required to heat the pack and charge. In other words, you're doomed. Okay.
Well, so what are they pumping in there? 220?
Well, yeah, the charger at your, if you have a home charger, one at your house or the common one, it's normally 240, you know, same as like a dryer. It's basically a dryer outlet, okay, for all intents and purposes. So that's about 6 kilowatts. But that, again, for an 80 kilowatt pack, you're talking about overnight.
Yeah.
So these charging stations are what, 440, 660?
They're 400 volts DC.
Okay. So they're like a locomotive. They're like a railroad car.
It's DC, and the vehicle there's a communication circuit in there. The vehicle tells the charging system how much how many amps you can deliver. The other thing is that when you get over about 80%, they all slow down.
Yeah.
Quite dramatically.
So it only charged 80% the battery.
Yeah. Yeah, if you need that last,
it would say it's full or it's done at 80.
Right, right, yeah. and that's normally what they do. There's if you're on a DC charger and it's compatible and blah blah blah. I mean, can you charge all the way to 100? You theoretically can, but it will take forever.
Yeah.
Well, what happened? I mean, what if poor Hal was dragging across the South and it's 105 degrees? And he's got the air conditioner on high. How far does he go? A mile?
Oh, I drove without the air conditioner on. I drove without the air conditioner on down there.
Well, the AC is a problem, and so is the heat. Because, with a gasoline or diesel-powered vehicle, the heat's free because it's waste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember my buddy...
It was just a horrible experience. And, you know, any party that pushes that crap on us without it being ready, it's not ready for prime time. That technology is not ready for prime time. And any party that thinks it is, they're nuts, man, because that was a horrible experience.
Well, if you had a farm somewhere and you had two pickup trucks and the town is 10 miles away, it's fine. It's like a golf cart, basically.
Except it's not, because the cost all in is so much higher. Okay, so one of the things that the Biden administration did...
I'll wait for helium-3.
Well, there you go. They goaded a bunch of local governments and state governments into passing mandates for school buses to be electric. Okay? School buses, of course, you know, have a service life. They wear out. They get replaced. Okay, so this was the mandate. So we've now got some data on these things. Not only is the bus twice as expensive, right? These things are, you know, they're a couple hundred thousand dollars for a school bus to buy one.
They're using them for regular buses, too.
Well, the electric one is $400,000, okay? That's the first problem.
Well, the electric buses they connect to the power grid, don't they? They have a trolley.
They have a trolley, you know, but you have to put
those things. We're talking about he's talking about battery buses. The trolley buses are fine.
But you have to have the infrastructure to charge them. First off, you have to put that in, okay, which means you have to be near industrial power where you can get 4,800 volts, okay, because, you know, the pack in those things is huge. But the second problem that they have is that now you've got actual data from these guys, because when you want to charge them, you need to charge them. If it's peak, you're on industrial power, you get hit with a demand charge. All right? Now, these guys, after the last couple of years, because now these things have been serviced for a little while, they have said that they're paying somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 times, 8 to 10 times the cost per mile, about $3 a mile.
Yeah, I've read that. It's unreal.
And the diesel is, you know, no, it's not cheap. The thing gets 9 miles a gallon, okay? However, it's, you know, 35 cents a mile or whatever, right? Because they're buying fuel in bulk, of course, and they can buy it when it's cheap and store it in a big tank. The lunacy of this. And then, yeah. You know, and so now you have school, and guess what? What does a school district
Can you imagine my family driving across country in one of these things? I can't imagine that. We'd never get there.
You're talking to me. I'm up in northern Michigan. I'm going skiing here in about another half hour. Okay, I'm getting in the car. I'm going to go over there. I drove, even with gas prices being, you know, stupidly high right now, I went straight through 10 and a half hours to get here from my home. That is impossible in an EV.
It is, without a doubt.
Yeah.
All right,
because you can't go that far. Dr. J's story, when his buddy buys a Tesla, and he's in L.A., right? And he looks at the thing, and you get to go, allegedly it was like 300 miles.
You
go on the thing.
It's not that.
I guarantee it's
not 300 miles.
So the guy goes, well, Vegas is 260.
Was he pushing it the last 50 miles?
Whoa, it gets worse. And he looks on the thing, and there's like four or five charging stations. This is, John was still doing the show. It has to be 6 years ago. And he gets in, when Tesla's first started.
Yeah.
He gets in the thing, and off he goes. It's 115. He's got the air on. he makes it. He realizes, well, I'm not going to make it to Vegas. He sees a charging station, and he pulls in, and he plugs in, and like nothing happens. He says to the guy, "Hey, what the hell's going on?" He goes, "Well, the station's in. They haven't connected it to the electric.
They haven't connected it."
So somehow or another, I don't know what he gets just enough of a trickle charge in the thing to where he makes it to the next one. And there's one. He calls Tesla. They had to come out and tow him back to L.A. But he made it like, however fast he was driving, with the 110 degree heat and the air conditioning, his mileage was like 100, not 300 or something.
Well, you know, you had these guys. You know, Ford has got all these tax breaks from Tennessee to put this plant in Tennessee, okay, outside Memphis, and you know, big ballyhoo. You know, all these jobs. Well, then people bought these F-150 Lightnings and actually tried to use them to do things like, you know, tow a camper, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They claim you can. One hill, maybe.
It's not a pickup truck. It's not a pickup truck. It's a thing that you take to Costco to load up on dry goods.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
That's what it is.
And the thing is that these guys, there's some people that ran some tests out west, and, you know, supposedly 300 miles worth of range. They hook this camper on the back, and they start down the road. They get about 30 miles down the road. It says, "Oh, by the way, you got about 60 left." They're like, "Oh, wait a minute! The charging station is 75 miles down the road."
Well, plus the guy said none of them are hooked up, but they're all listed on the map.
Hey, Carl, well, you need to take your own charging station. You need a generator that's powered by gas. So you need to have like a 300-gallon tank and a generator.
You know, so what you got to do is tow a second trailer with a generator on the ass.
Carl, how did the guys at Pullman always felt that the electric trains were real efficient? Now, is that different because it comes off the wires?
Well,
that's how it is in Utah. The track stations, the trains are all electric power through. I think the wires above them.
Yeah, well, the thing is, electricity, when you're talking about a train, the biggest advantage that an electric motor has, a traction motor, and this is the reason they run diesel electric for trains. You run a diesel engine, you convert it to electricity. And the reason they do it is because an electric motor has its maximum torque at zero RPM. Well, with a train, the most important place to have the torque is to get it moving. So the only reason you have diesel electric engines is that.
Well, you don't want
that's
any.
That's why the locomotive.
No, the reason why you have diesel electric is you don't want direct drive like a locomotive. That would all those iron things that were used to push the wheels around, the maintenance on those things was horrendous.
Yeah.
But the thing is that you can't, because of the gearing, you've got a gearing problem, right? In that you need a lot of torque at zero in order to get it moving, all right? But once it's moving, you need less torque. Then, of course, you know, horsepower comes into it, of course, you know, duh. But the thing is, diesel electric matches well with that, whereas a mechanical transmission is both extremely complex and oh, by the way, forget about it because, you know, you've got to cover the different speed range.
How big would that mechanical transmission be for a locomotive?
Well, the only place, well, it'd be huge, but then again, you've got a big locomotive, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, the other thing about it is that you can use, on a diesel electric, you can also use it in reverse and dump the heat to a large resistor bank, which is what they do. That's how they break them, okay? So you have the ability to do that as well. The only locomotive engines you see that have any kind of direct drive and it's hydraulic are the little switch engines that are used in yards.
Okay,
yeah, because they don't go very fast.
Yeah, they don't go very fast. But when you know what the transmissions look like, Hell, take a look at the big boys. See all that stuff outside of the wheels? That's the transmission.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
that was the thing with steam, too, in that steam, too, Chief, has its maximum torque when it's stationary.
Yeah. Well,
okay. That was why steam was popular.
Answer me this. I think the car came out with the same name, something like that. When I at the Economic Club of Chicago, we used to go to the luncheon before the auto show, the day before, and you go around and sit in all these cars, and Audrey was pretty damn limber. Got in one of the. She was sitting in a McLaren. The thing comes up to my waist. I'm like, I could never get in that damn thing. And even when I was slender, all right, what did it feel like? She goes, my ass was like touching the ground. She goes, how do you drive this?
It was like my RX-7 that I had in the 80s and 90s. I had an RX-7, man. My butt was about maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 inches. It felt like.
Oh, yeah.
Well, six or seven inches above the ground.
Well, this thing was zero.
Well, the reason you build them that way is because the center of gravity is low, and it means that they don't maneuverability, right?
Well, this thing was allegedly to 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds.
I would fly around those Idaho mountain river roads. Just I would do 65-70 on a 25-mile-an-hour switchback. Man, it was crazy.
Well, those rotaries were. I mean, the Wankel is a remarkable design.
Yeah,
it's biggest issue.
Smooth. Holy.
Well,
smokes.
the biggest issue with them is that it's impossible to meet modern emission standards because of the dead space.
Ah.
And the thing with Apex seals was a big deal for a while, and you know this and that. But the thing is that they're so small and light, you literally could take the thing out of the car and pick it up with your hands.
Well,
and for the power to weight ratio on those things is obscene.
Well, yeah. my question on this awesome was the guy gives his talk. He's the head of this car company. This is back when we were doing the electric stuff. So the guy was saying the most efficient thing, and by the way, you guys are just describing this, and it was a diesel engine in a car. Which always ran at its peak efficiency, so you didn't need a very big one. and he had electric motors on the front and the back. It began with an F was the name of the company. I forget the name of it, but I thought this thing is the cat's meow. It's like perfect. You got all the range you
want.
Well,
except that if we had our way, that'd be nice. Except it doesn't end up working that way, because what you in the real world, you would think somebody would have built this, okay?
Were building it, and they went out of business.
Well, Honda and the Prius try to run this sort of a cycle, okay, in that you have the engine that is not directly coupled, all right? Now, there is a modern version of this which is starting to show up to some extent, which does actually work, and that is a CVT that, instead of using belts, is actually a planetary gear set.
But this was exactly like a locomotive, only it was in a car. Why doesn't it work?
Because the efficiency makes a presumption that you're going to need that power some reasonable amount of time. And what you have to have is a battery pack and electric boost, because the only way to get the efficiency numbers that you'd like is for the engine to be sized for, as an example, makes enough power to be able to run the vehicle at highway speeds, okay?
With the air on it, which it did. That's what the idea was.
Which is, 20 horsepower, right?
Yeah, it wasn't very much. Yeah.
Right, which is not very much. The problem is, then you come upon a hill, and you're not going to be willing to go up the hill at 20 miles an hour. So as a result, you need energy storage and boost to be able to get through.
It had a battery. With this thing that would charge the battery.
Well, I understand that, Chief, but the problem is the driving experience isn't what people will put up with, and that's why they don't sell.
Okay. Because, I mean, electrics.
Because you only have, because the thing is this, you've got 5 or 10 minutes worth of that boost, and then your pack's depleted.
Okay, because, I mean, I know that if everybody ever goes to San Francisco, I don't know who they get to make them, they still have trolley buses because they're the only things who go up the hill.
Well, but that's because they have electric traction motors.
Yeah, I'm saying those things are fast.
Have, yeah, and they have their maximum torque at zero. Right.
So, anywho, we got to go to break, guys. Al, thank you for hanging around, and talk to you on Friday. But are you you're already up in northern Michigan? They still got snow? You going?
Yeah. No, we do. And, I mean, it's actually right now out the window it's snowing.
So where were you? In Iron Mountain, one of those places?
No, I'm actually near Boyne, so I'm near Harbor Springs and Petoskey.
Okay, well,
is that in the Upper Peninsula?
No, it's in the northern part of the lower.
Well, isn't it Boyne Mountain and Iron Mountain? Well, they renamed it. It used to be Boyne Mountain and Iron Mountain. We're in the same spot up there.
No. Well, Boyne. So
what's the elevation?
Oh, where were you at? 1,500, something like that. I can look it up.
So your longest run's 1,500 feet down, roughly.
Oh, it's not very. Yeah, they're not very. I'm sitting
in
the hotel
right now.
Is it
because of the
powder? It's 1,300 feet elevation, which is nothing. No, it's just this area. Anytime the wind blows from a direction that has water near it, which is, most of the time, right, from the west or the north, you get the lake effect snow.
Is it powdery?
So it depends. This time of year, this is going to be my last run. But remember, last May, I said they were going to get hammered like this and have this kind of a winter. Well, that's verified, and it's worked out real well for them. Not so much for Colorado.
Well, you're up there with the hoi polloi people. There's the rich people in Petoskey.
Well, yeah, okay. I'm not.
I'm not saying you're going in with that group, but there's a great golf in the summer. That place has happened with people that have scratch. If you know what I mean.
Chief, I'll tell you what. It used to be, when I was much younger, this area was so nice because it wasn't full of rich assholes from Chicago. And
well,
now
it used to be just rich assholes from Detroit is where it started.
Well, it wasn't even, I mean, where I used to hang out, at night you could drive, you literally could drive by the moonlight. There was that little light.
One of my buddies goes up there to golf, and the restaurants and the golf courses are spectacular.
Well, they're, you know what? Boyne, I never stay on property when I come up here because Boyne thinks you're going to pay $20 for a beer, and I'm not.
Well, there you go. Well, enjoy yourself. Be safe, and we'll talk. You'll be back home Friday or no?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be back home.
All right, buddy. Drive safe. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 107. We're starting to leak. Quick break. We'll come back. Talk to Hal.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Ricky on the board. S&P Futures down 25. NASDAQ Futures down 111. You see how things always move so smoothly when Ricky's on the board? Other guys are kind of challenged, but Ricky seems to have this down pretty good.
You know
so,
it, man.
So thank you. Thank you, Ricky. Dow futures down 124. Let's see what's moving here this morning. Most of the Dow is red. The only one that's moving a lot here is Goldman Sachs down 7.25. Caterpillar down 370. Nothing crazy. Over in the high tech, Tesla's down 250. Nvidia's down 50 cents. Nvidia's down to 175. It dropped some yesterday. Microsoft. Yesterday, when the news came out, the announcement from Washington about the people in talk with Iran, Microsoft went up, was up like almost $8, and then it was actually down a little bit and finished like up $1.50. So, stock is kind of wounded. It's down from 480 down to 382 in the last 6 months. I mean, a lot of these stocks have taken some pretty serious heat here. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 84.4%, FTSE up 17.2%. Kick around up 88 cents, we'll call that one flat. So not much going on over in Europe. Asia, these guys have been up and down. Nikkei was down like 4% yesterday. It's only back a percent and a half. It's up 736. It was down like 3,000 yesterday or something. Hang Seng up 681. That's almost 3%. So they've made back just about all of what they were down. Shanghai up 67. It's almost 2%. Again, those guys, pretty good bounce there. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.38. We're seeing these interest rates just keep creeping here a little bit. They were down a little yesterday, but I mean the 30-year is up to 4.95, and it's kind of troublesome. I mean, seeing these things leak up like this. Oil up 3.14, back up to 91. Where Brent is back over 102, over 100 at 102.47, up 2.50. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.93. RBOB up a dime, up to 3.08, which is about as high as it's been. So. When you look at what you're going to get, your gas futures are going to be wholesale at 308, you know, add another 30, 40, 50 cents for transportation and profit, and then pack another 90-some cents on for taxes if you're in Illinois. I mean, you're talking 450 easy or pretty soon. I paid 419 last week. I think that goes up another 20, 30 cents easy. Gold down 340. 4,400, it was way above that. I think it was in the 4,600 range. Let me look and see, just to give you an example. But gold has really gotten its butt kicked. So I'll go to the graph here and take a little time. I think we were at 5,100. So we're down 700 points in the gold. That's a ways. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is kind of the crypto. We've got crypto. Up eight bucks with 70,860. It's hung in there. It's actually been up when gold has been down, which is kind of interesting. And we've got the Dow is up a little bit today, with the euro at 115.8, British pound at 133.9. So there you have it. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:39 here in Chicago. 32 degrees right now with a high of 50. Clouds and sun throughout the day, and tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 40 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 71 degrees right now with a high of 100. Very hot, record-breaking temperature with blazing sunshine. Tonight will be clear and warm with a low of 66 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Kennedy, Eisenhower, and Stevenson are experiencing heavy traffic inbound. 39 minutes from O'Hare on Kennedy, 32 minutes Eisenhower from Wolf, and 28 minutes inbound Stevenson from 24 to Dan Ryan. There's also mild traffic on the Dan Ryan. Edens is clear. For sports real quick, MLB spring trainer yesterday, we got White Sox losing to Athletics 10-9. Cubs beat Yankees 12-6 and Diamondbacks lose to Guardians 7-0. Today we got Cubs Yankees at 2:05 p.m. and Guardians Diamondbacks at 2:40 p.m. For the NHL, yesterday the Senators beat Rangers 2-1, and today we got Blackhawks at Islanders at 6 p.m. Lastly, NBA, Bulls beat Rockets 132-124, and tonight we got Nuggets at Suns at 10 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Just real quick, I'm not going to go through this much, but hell, I don't know if you follow the women's basketball at all. I mean, I do because I watch the Irish a little bit, and they won yesterday, played well. That one young lady, Hannah Hidalgo, is so much fun to watch. She's really something. But the pecking order in this women's basketball is really something. How there's only, you know, if you go back for the last like 20 years, maybe even longer, the same four or five teams. It's been a little spreading out of some of the talent, but really it's really locked in a couple of spots. You, I don't know if you've even spotted this. UConn played Syracuse yesterday. Scores.
Yeah, I saw the halftime score.
Yeah, the final was 98-45, and I'll say this: the game was nowhere near.
It probably could have been 200-30.
Yeah, but it's nowhere near what as close as the score would indicate. Was it like 60-10 or something?
I did an AU tournament one year, and this team from Boise, 15 kids on the team. They're like, I don't know, eighth graders. They're wearing the pull away jersey or the pull away pants, and they got the matching warm-ups. Everybody's wearing the same basketball shoes. They look like, you know, the Lakers out there, right? Yeah. They're playing a team from – that's from Boise. They're playing some team from some small town in central Idaho where, I swear, they weren't even wearing shoes. They're wearing cutoffs and socks. I mean, it was that stark. And I think the final score ended up being 105-4.
Yeah, it's
– and about halfway through the second half – the kid from the team wearing the cutoffs, essentially, he picked up his pivot foot like four or five times on the wing. And I didn't call travel. And the fans were screaming, "That's a travel, that's a travel." The game's decided. I want the thing to be over. I turn around to the fans, ignore the game, and I go, "Look, if he switches his pivot foot six times, I'll call that a travel. Is that okay?" But that's... that's what college basketball has turned into, man. It's kind of the same thing for the men. You got like, I don't know, 8 or 9, maybe 10 programs, and then everybody else is just afterthought. It's not fun to watch anymore for me. It's
well,
just
South
not.
Carolina, this is women's. They're the number one seed. They beat 9 seed USC 101-61.
I mean, that was crazy. I couldn't believe the score on that one.
Well, did you see the
But yeah, I mean, if you look at South Carolina, Tom, for a second, when they played Caitlin Clark's Iowa team, I swear Iowa had maybe one or two good ball players with Caitlin, right?
Yeah.
Everybody else looked like a high school player. And then South Carolina has three waves of five. They're like a hockey team.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They have three skating lines, and each one of the skating lines could be a starting five that could probably win the whole thing.
Well, there's
that's incredible.
Well, there's money involved in this. I mean, one guy, I don't know if you listened to, what was it, Friday night? I'm stuck between games, right? I'm listening to 2-3 guys. And, you know, this is appropriate for Stacks and Jacks because we're talking about essentially the birth of another industry. I mean, it used to be an amateur, now it's not. And he was talking about how if you want to be in the game, the minimum budget now to have a real team is $10 million.
Yeah.
The time you pay people and all those kinds of things. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, it's interesting because Duke and South Carolina and maybe, you know, I don't know how many basketball teams, what the revenue is now for basketball, you know, and whether or not, you know, I mean, you and I think, you know, we'll disagree on most things, but I think we're going to agree on this one, is once you let the dollars guide your decisions, once you get down that road, you're not in charge anymore. The dollars are. And
well, here's the crazier thing. Eventually, it's going to seep down into high school.
It already
basketball.
Has. It already has.
It's going to be crazy at the high school, though.
It has for 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's going to even get crazier.
Well, now it's in some ways, Let me finish my thought, and then we'll roll into that, because there's big difference in California. It's been that way for a long time now. Because and anyway, but you look at the.
Hey, and I don't begrudge people. I mean, if I can make a bunch of money being the fastest dishwasher at the Dodge City Inn, then the fastest guy in the track field should be able to get paid.
Well, but then it comes down to, I mean, I used to go once in a while. I didn't even go very often because I wasn't that good. I was pretty good at four-wall handball, but three-wall handball is another game. If you're good at that, you're an elite athlete.
Four-wall handball?
I mean, you play it's in a racquetball court. That's called four-wall.
Okay.
Three-wall, there's no back wall.
Oh, okay. So it's open.
It's open. Yeah. So, yeah.
Like outdoor?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
So the three-wall handball guys would go play at Rainbow Beach even after the neighborhood change and was bad, 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And the cops would let you park on the grass because they didn't want you parking on the street. And the guys who played there were elite athletes. Hmm. But they're not getting paid because nobody wants to watch them. Nobody pays to watch them. I mean, I wanted to watch it because I saw how good they were. But when you get to this point where there's all this money, well, there's all this money from where? And some of it, if it's from alumni who think that when their team wins, something grows an inch, well, okay, that's a group. I never felt that way. When you actually come down to dollars and cents, careful what you ask for. Because now I'm not paying the girls' swim team. Screw them. They're not making me a dime. I mean, if we're going to go down that road, we're only doing stuff if it's worth money, and then you be careful where you go. Am I paying the guy's fencing team? They don't make any money. Screw them. I mean, so I'm saying how many basketball teams may have that kind of revenue? Because one of my best buddies is a big Marquette fan. And Marquette, now they're not paying people. They were the last into the portal. They weren't doing the portal. We've gone from a really good team to being, you know, not even making anywhere near the playoffs. Now the alumni is going, okay, what's it going to cost for us to become a real team again, to become a UConn, to become a St. John's? The answer appears to be 10, 12 million bucks to pay people and, you know, do the recruiting and, you know, all the portal crap. All right, well, now what is the team generating revenue? I'm going to guess a good Marquette team probably can generate 10 million revenue. I don't know what the Big East TV contract is. If they win a couple games in the NCAA, what does that mean? How much per game? Kevin will probably talk about that on Friday or tomorrow. How can they get there? Now, all of a sudden, you get the women's basketball. I mean, what's the revenue? I don't mean, as much as you want things to be equal between men and women, I don't think these women's teams make 10 million bucks. I mean, what's the ticket price at Notre Dame? 10 bucks? I mean, I don't know. Kevin knows. He'll talk tomorrow about it. What's the number? Do I think the Illinois ladies program generates 10 million a year? I'm not ponying that money up. Why would I?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I don't like women's basketball.
I think what's going to happen is you're going to get very few really good teams in women's college basketball.
Well, which has been that way for a while. But so I'm saying, where are you going with this? Be careful. As Jack Callahan used to say, he was on the board of the sea, but we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. I mean, sort of.
Do you think all this money changes the style of basketball?
Well, sure. It comes down to depth. How many people are you playing? I mean, and the other guy, to kind of finish my story, comes down.
Does it give the player the power to be the center, and the coach has to manage personalities?
Well, now that depends on who's paying him.
Yeah.
If the school's paying them, I think the coach is in charge, right? But if all I got to do is throw a tantrum and jump in a portal, how much is he in charge? But if I'm, let's just say, PTI Securities is huge, and I'm foolish enough to pony up, you know, $2 million for some basketball player to play at Notre Dame, and all of a sudden the coach benches him, I mean, who's in charge here, me or the coach?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the you know, if we're sponsoring these players, what if you're seeing, it's not just PTI, I think a lot of it is coming down from the Nikes and those kinds of people, because now it's working its way down into high school ball. In basketball, it's been there a long time. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but for a long time, especially in some of the other neighborhoods, you know, there might not be fathers around, right? So the basketball coach, to a certain extent, became the kid's father, kept him out of trouble, blah, blah, blah. And the coach got paid, shoe contracts and all this stuff, and was able to sprinkle that around to the players a little bit. But then it became the AAU team.
I mean,
where especially in girls volleyball, girls basketball, where AAU, girls and guys had played way more games for AAU than they did for their high school. So the AAU guy became the center of here. He's taking the kids, quote, off the streets. He's handling them. He's taking care of them. He's making sure the gangs don't touch them. He does all that stuff. Now, and he's getting paid, shoe contracts and everything. There's all those kinds of guys. Now it's going back kind of to the high school in California. But now all of a sudden, if Hal is in charge of Nike and sees some kid on the south side of Chicago, like a Derrick Rose, for instance, hey, this kid's really good. You can give the kid a shoe contract. Now it's kind of a futures, right? Because there's no way you're putting Hal Snar's name on a sneaker or basketball shoe and me walking to Dick's Sports and going, oh, man, this is a Hal Snar shoe. I better pay $200 for it. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. But now you're going to be able to direct that kid, I think, unless the kid's an idiot, you're going to be able to direct that kid to, quote, a Nike college, right? Because now you're sponsoring the hell out of these colleges. I mean, the guy from the Notre Dame 3 years ago, the Hartman guy, who came from Vandy, the quarterback, he played his fifth year at Notre Dame, and he allegedly got, you know, $1 million.
Is he the one that ended up being the quarterback at New England?
He's second string someplace.
Oh,
I don't think he started anywhere. But
okay.
But he
didn't the New England quarterback, wasn't he at Notre Dame for a year?
That I don't know. I mean, Kevin
Derek May. I thought he was at Notre Dame for a year.
Maybe, but I don't know if
his
he played.
His last year.
Maybe, I don't know, but Kevin didn't know that. I'll ask him tomorrow. But he, but say now, there's no way that Under Armour gave this guy $1 million and says, by the way, I'm going to Oregon and Nike sculpt, and that's not going to happen. So, you know, you wonder, now, the question is, if Under Armour gives the guy $1 million to go to Notre Dame, and the coach says, I'm starting my sophomore ahead of him, I don't know, is that okay, or is that a fart in church? This whole pecking order is kind of to be determined, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So what do you make of...
I don't begrudge anybody doing it.
I don't either, but just define what you are.
If a really attractive girl can sign a modeling contract...
No, that's different. She's not getting...
No, I don't think so, because, you know, it's physical attributes, you know. Player has physical attributes.
When a girl has
physical attributes.
When I say
signed a contract based on those physical attributes.
Okay, but when I say it's different... That was the original intent. If you ever think the Supreme Court thinks anything through, that was the original intent of the name, image, and likeness.
Yeah,
is in of an example, not just ladies. Dr. J's brother Paul, unfortunately, died from ALS. One of the nicest men. He was the opposite linebacker from Ron Rivera at Cal, and Ron Rivera and went up and had a big pro career, and he's been a coach forever. Good guy. Yeah. They were best friends. Paul was actually in an acting program. He wanted to be an actor. And in the summertime, they'd want him to be a model. We're not talking about, you know, pants-off model. He was... was it Kohl's or somebody to want him
a
to
Burt
wear...
A Reynolds model?
Yeah, but they wanted him to wear, like, flannel shirts or something. You know?
Yeah.
Without his Cal hat on.
Or a clothing catalog model.
They, oh, no, you can't do that. We own your image and likeness. He couldn't do that. He couldn't go act in a play either in the summertime. Mm. Well, that's what the original intent of the Supreme Court thing was, is that they don't own your image and likeness. You do it. If you want to go...
Yeah.
So a young lady becoming a model in Sports Illustrated, that's her name, image, and likeness. The school used to say you couldn't do that. That's not the same as getting paid to play basketball. That jumped out of that decision.
I think, personally, if you have certain attributes, I don't care what they are, you have a pretty face, you have calves that allow you to jump 40 inches in the air. To me, if someone wants to give you a contract and pay you to do what you have a passion for, that's between the person who's paying and the person who's
receiving.
I have no problem with
it. I don't either, but I'm saying split the Hal mind for a second into getting paid to play basketball.
But, you know, the funny thing is I'm okay with it,
okay.
But I don't like watching it.
Right. Yeah. What I'm saying is there's a difference. This is not the intent of the original decision.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, I'm with you.
Tom, I'm laissez-faire. If two consenting adults want to enter a contract,
all I'm saying is,
and that being a kid's parent, that's their business.
Do me a favor, will you? Cut the laissez-faire down the middle. At least say one is different than the other. There's a difference between somebody getting paid to play football at Notre Dame and somebody in the summertime, because he can sing, being able to sing someplace.
I honestly don't see the difference.
Because the school used to say, because you're playing football, you can't sing. That's decision number one, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now
that decision is wrong. And I
understand. I'm saying that's what the Supreme Court did. Is all I'm saying. Hey, we got to talk about where are we going here? Inflation, these interest rates creeping up. I don't know if you heard earlier, I was talking about some of the inflation things that people told me about this weekend, or we're talking stuff doubling and, you know, up 25%. And the last two, CPI and PPI, came in hot as hell, even though they claimed the CPI didn't.
Oh, boy. You know, inflation is really hitting us down here. I went to buy coffee the other day, and I ended up buying a can of Walmart, you know, ground coffee, medium roast, the Walmart brand, because it was $20 for this big, huge, monstrous can. And what I normally buy was $20, up $8.
Well,
probably a month.
All right, the money supply is coming out allegedly today.
Oh, wow, I meant to update
my. What do you think it's going to show?
Trend. I don't know. I'm going to update my quadratic trend, what it does. I'll share what I find after the show.
Well, today's what? March 24th, next release date.
Yeah.
So it's not released yet, I don't believe.
Yeah, I'll
update. And we're, of course, a month behind. So the last numbers we have is January, but I think that we're going to see an explosion of money supply here because of this war, because these guys are going to print money to pay for it.
Yep. Yeah.
So what is the hell?
I think
world?
We're at $39 trillion right now, right? $39 trillion in debt.
Yeah, we go up a trillion every 100 days.
Yeah.
What?
It's not sustainable. I mean, I think these politicians think that, hey, I'll be out of office in 5 years, won't matter. But it's going to matter. Eventually, $39 trillion turning into $50 trillion in the next 4 or 5 years. At some point, it's going to matter and it's going to break down.
Well, what?
Something has to be done to get us off this path. And I don't see either party providing the solutions.
By the way, Kevin says that Drake May guy played his entire college career at North Carolina.
Okay, I was probably thinking of the guy that came from Vanderbilt then.
Yeah, that's A.K. Hartman. He came from Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's what he was.
He might be kicking around in the NFL somewhere. I've never heard of him starting any place.
Yeah.
But obviously, the creatures like Carl and me, and you to a certain extent, if I can never get a straight story, you know, just giving you grief.
I'm very consistent, Tom.
I know, but we've been not invited on national shows forever because the Armageddon, we keep warning people about.
Oh, we don't support the religious doctrines of these two political parties.
Well,
I'm not a priest.
Yeah,
in their religion, I'm just not.
Well, what I'm saying is, the pretty girl on TV would say to the three of us, "Hey, you've been saying this is going to happen like for a while. It's been 10 years. When are you going to learn to shut up?" I think it's getting somewhat close. I don't even know what the solution is, to be honest with you. Right now, I could see let me ask question number one. If inflation rate goes to 6%, which I think it already is right now, it might be higher than that. If that's ever reflective in the interest rates, which somehow the Fed has been able, maybe the next time we're on, we'll try and figure out how they manage to keep rates way below the inflation rate, but they have. What if that ever is reflective, and then we're all of a sudden the 10-year rates are 8, or 8.5, or 10? I don't want to go to 15 like they were when I started. Say they're 8 or 10. What does that do to the housing prices? What does it do to stock prices? What does it do to this wealth bubble? Because the people's income has never kept up with the inflation. If all of a sudden that wealth drops by 20 or 30%, what does the world look like? I mean, and how does the government pay that interest? What do we have to do here? We got to go conquer a bunch of other companies and steal their stuff? I mean, it seems like that might be a style here. But where does this lead us? Where's the out?
Well, I think it could lead to just the nation splitting apart. I mean,
what do you mean, people blaming each other instead of themselves?
Well, I could, you know, I don't want the Democrats in control because, you know, like. I won't vote for a Democrat because they'll caucus with California Democrats who want to turn the nation into California, and I don't want that.
You might end up.
You know, so I don't know where to turn.
Okay. I am not a fan of the liberal side of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
But I think they or the Republicans might get a brain cell working and say, we're not doing that. We're gonna go.
I don't think they're gonna get a brain cell working, Tom.
Well, one of the sides better, or else we might get a third party.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't have a problem with, by the way.
Yeah. The problem with the third party is, like, if say the Libertarian Party were to emerge and supplant one of the other,
it won't be those idiots. But go ahead.
I know it won't. But let's just say, for argument's sake, let's just say the Libertarian Party supplants either the Democrats or Republicans. Well, it's going to find out really quickly that its solutions aren't sellable during election time. And so it's going to have to, if it supplants the Democrats, it'll start promising subsidies to individuals. If it supplants the Republicans, it'll start selling, you know, tax cuts, right? It's going to find a way. It will eventually evolve into whatever it supplants, well, because it needs sellable solutions.
All right, we got a dash here, bud, but we got to go a couple minutes. Here's I'm sort of a different sort of economist than you are. Not better or worse, just sort of different. My training was in behavioral economics, which is George Stigler School. You're the math school. I'm jealous of you because you know the math better than me. But I look at it as going, the part of the Democratic Party that has controlled the place for a while is in serious disrepute, even among what I would consider to be traditional Democrats.
Yeah,
and
I agree with that.
I look at the Republican Party. There's the 20%. Trump is our man. He's the dictator. He's the Solomon. That group, to me, is shrinking by the day. And there's a huge amount of what I would consider to be moderate Republicans, the traditional Chuck Percy, Everett Dirksen, those kind of Republicans, that really are not that much different than the moderate Democrats in a lot of ways. So, as a matter of fact, in probably 8 out of 10 decisions. So what I'm seeing is probably 60 to 70% of the voters are not represented by either one of the extremes of either party.
Yeah.
Now either one of those parties is going to recognize that. And the Republicans, I think, probably the smartest ones. If Trump gets his ass annihilated in November, the party is going to turn to the middle, and they're going to drop that guy like a bad habit. The Democrats...
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem with Trump is, if you look at him, if you really examine his policies, he's really more like a 90s Democrat.
Spoken like somebody who only... Whatever the Democrats would be worse. A 90s Democrat doesn't bomb 7 countries in 13 months.
Well, what I'm saying, though, in terms of his spending, I mean, he's not a conservative.
No.
I don't know where this idea that he's a conservative comes from. I don't
see only by people who hate the Democrats more.
He's a price-setting progressive, in my opinion.
He's setting
prices on Medicare.
He's a despot.
Prescription drugs.
He's a despot. He goes from topic to topic to topic and with what he feels. There's no mission there. Yeah. He wants his own private army. He wants to be empowered until the end. I mean, that's my point is, from an economic side, I see neither side supporting what I consider to be the majority. So somehow, some way, and I don't know how, be it a third party or one of the parties waking up, maybe in the next election, one side.
Well, the issue is when during these primaries or the non-presidential election year elections, I think what happens is regular folk don't vote, and the only people who are voting are the pissed off extremes. I think that's what happens.
Well,
that's why we get the leaders that we get.
We also got a boatload of money flying around, and I don't see how this Citizen United, somehow the Supreme Court saying anybody can spend this money, how you don't have to identify yourself. How the AIPAC can have 5 different names and support people or vote.
Yeah.
How you can spend $1 million voting on negative ads for somebody and not say who you are. I same thing with Pritzker. He spent a lot of money on negative ads for this one guy here. How does he not say that I'm Pritzker and not the Illinois First Party? Who the hell is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually have more problems with this than you do. I'll be honest with you. Yesterday I was reading off the list of all these people that spent all this money. I didn't know who any of them was, yeah, until somebody writes the article after the election. The AIPAC, which is the Jewish group, five different PACs. None of the names, you heard them, like the America First PAC, blah, blah, blah. Not one of them identified who they were. I mean, obviously, if I really would have dug, I maybe could have found out, but...
Well, I mean, it's probably just a way to, like, spread out your influence so you don't look too influential, right?
Well, okay, I think...
To deflect from your agenda.
Well, Pritzker spent several million dollars on negative ads for this guy Raja running against the lady who won. And he didn't lose by that much. I would be willing to bet that if every one of those ads said this ad is paid for by Governor Pritzker, the guy would have won. Because nobody wants your governor doing that. I don't. Do you? Just because he's got money?
Yeah.
Anyway, bud. Real quick, you gave this presentation. Were you applauded? Did they wing apples at you? What happened?
Probably, maybe amongst, I don't know, maybe younger American scholars, the younger guys.
Wait
maybe
a minute. You're in Auburn, Alabama. Scholars? You're talking about scholars down there?
Oh, yeah. The Austrian economist. I think the older guys are really leery of statistics and mathematical models. But yet, some mathematical models are okay. But my research was very econometric and using government data. And what I found is I disaggregated firm counts down to the types of firms that generally hire low-skilled labor.
Why don't we go through this in detail next week, bud?
Huh?
Why don't we go through this in detail next week?
Oh, yeah, no problem,
Hey, so they...
it's 9:05, wow.
Yeah, so you... all right, so you masqueraded as an Australian economist instead of the monetarist... instead of the monetarist little Milt Friedman that you really are. So you're just like
a pragmatic Austrian.
Anyway, congratulations on that. SP Futures down 33, NASDAQ Futures down 127. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.